Ready?
1 second.
It's recording.
It's recording.
Good evening and welcome to episode 22 of Unforced Errors. An Englishman, a Macanese and a Grecian talking about tennis and saying the things that tennis commentators don't dare say. I'm joined by Sir David Radina. Hello, David.
Hello, Jim.
And joined for the second time, I believe.
Second and a half,
by
I guess.
Sir Stephen Milanos. He's going to tell us what we're going to be talking about. But there's been some news since Stephen's last been on the show. He has actually got married. So I'm going to ask you what I ask all people the day after their wedding. Is your good lady wife into tennis?
She watched the match today, so that will do, I think. But I tried playing with tennis with her before, and she didn't really manage to hit the ball at all. So
oh, no.
Well, we gave up. She can play table tennis.
Move on to ping pong. Go.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, talk us through today's topic. You've chosen it. What's it all about?
Okay, so it seems slightly strange timing, but during the last few Clay Masters tournaments, I feel like I haven't been that into the matches and haven't watched much of it. I just feel like with so many of them cancelled last year and no crowds and a lot of the big players missing, so like Federer's been injured, Nadal and Djokovic have both missed matches, and it just feels like I don't really care as much. And I'm wondering if it's reflected in other people, if they're feeling the same way, and what can tennis do to try and get the excitement back? But then today's match was brilliant between Nadal and Djokovic. So
The final of Rome. We all watched it.
The whole tournament was spectacular. And I actually can relate exactly with what you said. And I'm glad you chose this topic because I've been feeling like that for months now. Disconnected. And I am addicted to tennis. Watching, playing. And without Nadal, Federer and Djokovic, it almost becomes uninteresting somehow. It's like these three guys, they are the ones that are like driving the force of intense tennis that the tennis needs in the world. I don't know what you think.
Well, it was a real return to how it used to be in this tournament, in that you had crowds back. I noticed in the crowd there was atmosphere, there was the advantages of a crowd roaring them on, the disadvantages too, people shouting out just before serves. But even that's a nice reminder of how it used to be and how it should be. And Nadal and Djokovic definitely weren't disconnected today. Neither were Tsitsipas during the tournament, Jack Sinner, all the other players. I think it was almost had a nostalgic feel to it today. And Djokovic and Nadal resumed their rivalry, which is one of tennis's great subplots. And during Corona, we've missed that. There have been less head-to-heads, I suppose, with Federer missing. It was good to see them in the final. I probably would have liked Tsitsipas in the final, but it does mean that you can kind of see that Djokovic-Nadal rivalry, and who's going to jump ahead 29-28 now to Djokovic.
It's funny because even though Nadal and Djokovic are back and they are like putting things in order, I feel that Zverev, having won the tournament previous to this one, and Tsitsipas, there's some drive inside them that I didn't feel for a while now. So I'm hopeful that now, at least these two guys, bring this clay court season with fire. Exactly.
Yeah. This gives me a chance to ask something I want to ask of Stephen. I'm not sure of the answer from him. You've got Grecian blood in you, obviously, Stephen. So when you see Tsitsipas, the Greek player Tsitsipas, and you see Nadal, your hero of tennis, and they're playing each other, who do you want to win?
It's very tough, yeah. I'm always really on the fence. I obviously want Nadal to officially have the record of being the best of all time. I don't guess there's no official, really, but to get the most slams would be massive. To get a bigger head-to-head against Djokovic would be massive.
It's a big step
in the arguments,
it, yes.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I really like Tsitsipas as a player as well, and obviously I'm half Greek, but yeah, he's Greek, so it's a nice link there.
So maybe when Nadal does win title number 21, French Open, you can support Stefano a bit more.
Yeah, although if he's playing against Tsitsipas in the final, it will be a very
difficult choice
there.
Well, no winner, no loser, really, for you if you want both to win.
That's true. That's always a bonus. Tsitsipas has time, but he does not have time to break the Grand Slam record that Djokovic, Nadal and Federer have.
No.
None of them have anyway, do they?
But he could break up the big three, couldn't he? He could be the kingmaker.
That's true.
Who gets
that's,
in there
they can make history for them.
Yes.
Instead of for themselves. Yeah. Only Sinner really has a chance because he's the youngest. It feels like there's really no era like the era that these three guys have brought into tennis. And it feels almost more and more like there's never going to be an era like that ever again. I keep believing that one of these kids is going to come up and start winning slams and start dominating like these guys did. But it's just not happening. Do you think it's going to happen again?
Don't think it's going to be in my lifetime.
Not in your lifetime, exactly. Yeah, maybe into the future of the future.
Yes, and by the time it happens again, it'll be so long in the future, people might not realize about Federer, Djokovic. They'd have to discover it from stone tablets in a mountain kind of thing. But it's just a freak era. I suppose Da Vinci and Michelangelo, they lived at the same time, didn't they? Were they contemporaries? I'm not sure. Not too much up on my art. It's really a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's less common than Halley's Comet, really. Enjoy it while we can. And I'm sure, who's going to be the first to retire? Who's going to be the first who wants to duck out of this three-way competition?
Yeah.
Probably Federer.
Probably.
But Nadal's body, you never know. That could break early.
It feels like it's breaking slowly.
Yeah. You can see how angry he was today when he tripped over the line. He's so worried about getting injured. It seems to shake him for like a game as well.
He doesn't even fall over like a normal human being, does he? He flings his rackets a way to break his fall.
Yeah, how quick his reaction
Even
was.
His falls are amazing.
Hello, Ivana.
Hello.
You want to be part? Who is your favorite player?
She's gone into the stats room.
Ivana is always mentioned. What's your favorite player? Świątek.
Yeah. Oh. Well, we have to talk about her.
We have to talk about her in the final.
A new era.
Damn. That was weird.
What can you say?
That was weird.
Recap what happened, because it was a bit of history in a way, wasn't it?
It was strange. The final of the women today was... It's funny because we're so mixed up today. We were supposed to talk about how dull the tennis has been, but suddenly we end up in the last week and tennis has been superb. That match between Djokovic and Tsitsipas, that match between...
Oh, that was so good.
I saw the highlights.
Also, I felt like there was more intensity to that match as well than the one today. I just felt like Tsitsipas really wanted it and just didn't quite have the mentality to win the big points was his only
issue.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's ready to make the step up and I would make a bet on him reaching the French Open final.
Yes. Depending on the draw.
Depending on the draw, yeah.
Yeah. We know the draw, do we?
Not yet.
No.
Right, so it's a 50-50. Well, actually, as you said earlier, Medvedev might be the world number two. Follow the rankings, the world rankings.
And you've seen Medvedev's attitude in the clay.
Yeah,
have you seen? He's talking to himself loud. This is dangerous.
Well,
and he's like, what is he doing?
He's a tennis player. It's the French Open that's coming up. That's what he's doing in these tournaments. Apart from losing in the first round. Wouldn't it be incredible if he got to the final?
Medvedev actually has the type of game
we would think would be good.
Would be good for clay, isn't it?
Why can't he
stay there and stay there. And it's disappointing, his attitude.
I didn't watch his matches, but I just saw scores and interviews and reports and, just...
Highlights of him chucking his racket at sit-overs too.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Fantastic.
Does he maybe need a coach, especially for clay, just to give him some coaching?
Yeah.
2 months of the year, it's a big part of the tennis season. You can't just write it off if you're a tennis player.
I agree with you. Maybe, at least during the clay court season, he must have somebody there to encourage him.
Yeah.
What strikes me as odd is that he decides to have that attitude of just, I hate clay. What am
Something
I doing here?
Something needs to change.
He shouldn't just not play in the clay until he's ready to go for clay.
But buy a house in Paris, the clay court, force yourself to live there a few months of the year.
Become a clay court lover.
Get friendly with the shop owners who'll come along and support you in the tournament. Just do something to get over that first round barrier and maybe the floodgates will open. Maybe you can judge a tennis player by how good were they on their weakest surface. It's one of the tests for a great tennis player. You know, Lendl's weakest surface, grass, he still reached 2 Wimbledon finals.
Yes.
So it's...
definitely important.
He really does. But we've forgotten about Swiatek. So what was the score? Who was she playing?
I was going to say we've forgotten about Sampras and didn't mention the fact he only ever got to the semi at the French
Open. He did, and people said, I think Sampras himself said he regrets not switching to a different size racket, which he only discovered afterwards.
Yes, so Świątek won 6-love against Pliskova.
In the final.
In the final, in 40-something minutes.
Losing just 13 points. So pretty much won a game.
What the hell? And the strangest thing to me, guys, I'll pass the ball to you, Steve, is normally when there's a 6-love, things switch. The player starts thinking of something else, you know, different tactics. Momentum always shifts a little bit after it didn't happen.
I'm just trying to think of my own experience from playing tennis. I don't remember ever losing 6-love before.
No, doesn't happen.
I've lost a 6-love set, but there'd always be a swing. You'd try something else and try and figure something out, and you'd at least get a surprise game. But yeah, to have both sets the same and just struggle to change anything.
It was a strange final.
But this has happened before. I'm sure people losing 6-love, or very heavily, and then actually beating the same opponent quite soon after. Is it a good thing to beat someone 6-love? Because that really stays in the opponent's mind. I know Rome is a massive tournament, but the French is even bigger.
Yeah.
Actually, Swiatek had a very heavy defeat, didn't she, in the French Open the previous
6-1,
year?
6-1, 6-love, something like that, against Halep.
And
then she did
back.
The same to Halep the next year.
Is it best to beat someone not too heavily? Because if you beat them too heavily...
I would even say that normally beating someone 6-love in the first set is dangerous. I've seen it
swing the complete opposite way, where it's been 6-love the second set the other way.
So. It happened to Azarenka, for example, in the final against Osaka. Well, for a 6-love to happen, especially at this level, especially with a Grand Slam champion and a former number one Pliskova, or at least former number one.
Most of them are.
Yes, exactly.
It's hard to keep up, isn't it?
6-love only happens if the person that is losing allows it. So in her defense, maybe something happened the day before, personal, that made something change.
Did you watch the match?
The whole match.
And was she playing badly?
She looked like a zombie. But she's normally like that. Pliskova is very...
Subdued,
yes.
Maybe it's one of those days for her. I've seen Andy Murray before just not move for points, but yet... Maybe she was just being noble and saying, I don't want to do that typical thing so many players do of walking to the net, saying it's not my day.
Especially in the final.
My nose hurts. And she just toughed it out, which is very noble of her if she did that.
But yes, maybe that's it. Now, we have to give props to Świątek, yes? Congratulations to her.
Defending champion as well for the French Open coming
up. It gives some spice. Maybe
looking
she can
good.
Win it again.
Maybe like Osaka, because Osaka defended her first Grand Slam title,
yes.
Didn't
she?
That would
be the rivalry that I would love to see.
Where is Osaka? Because we said at the beginning that a lot of players are missing from tournaments.
True.
In Rome, where's Serena Williams?
Serena lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, she lost in the second round.
Ah,
or the first
too.
Even.
And I think I read earlier today that Nick Kyrgios hasn't been playing, which...
He hasn't left Australia. He played the Australian Open in the warm-up event, and then... Yeah, he doesn't want to leave because everyone else is COVID-ridden. He seems to be really...
It's surprising because I see him as a risk-taker, the guy who does underarm serves on big points and asks a member of the crowd, where do you think I should serve it? Where do you want the ace to go? And yet he hasn't left his country.
It's strange.
I don't think I would if I was in Australia, though.
It was serious there. They took it very seriously.
Yeah, and I mean, they've got pretty much their full freedom back, so...
Now, going back to the topic of our show, what you said a few... minutes ago, you now believe that Tsitsipas has something in him that shows that he's ready to step to the big league. I agree with that. There's something about Tsitsipas that is a bit different from the other players. And Zverev is also showing it a little bit. But Tsitsipas is so obsessed, so focused. And he feels like he looks like the champion that is going to happen sooner or later. Do you think that's going to happen? That he can finally win a Grand Slam this year?
Yeah.
And that goes for you as well, Jim. Afterwards.
I think it's just about now he's gaining experience in the big points against the big players and realizing what needs to be done. And he's getting closer and closer every time. And I think, he's ready to break through. And also, just to go back to your previous point as well about Grand Slam titles and him not being able to get close to the current big three. But when did Djokovic win his second Slam? It was 2011, wasn't it?
He came very late.
So
there was
that
a gap.
21, 22 maybe when he won his second.
That's very true. And now
it's not impossible, is it? For
I have hopes for Tsitsipas. And his backhand got so much better suddenly.
Yeah.
He's staying there, he's being patient, and clay really suits his game. And I was also going to ask you, guys, who is the next guy, other than the big three, to win a Grand Slam? Is it Tsitsipas then?
Tsitsipas for me, yeah.
You too, Jim?
Do you remember someone called Dominic Thiem?
Yes, I do.
You might have to Google this.
Yes. He's already won one.
But yes. What's happened to that? And they were saying after the Rome final today, hey, let's not count out Dominic Thiem. I think Tsitsipas is in the driving seat. I think his chances in the French of winning the whole damn shooting match depend on the draw.
He's also ranked fifth or sixth, so he's could even be in the same quarter.
Let's see if the rankings take care of themselves soon, because on the trajectory it's going, Medvedev surely will be dropping down after today.
Yeah, although he didn't make a lot of points last year on clay anyway, so he's not really defending many.
I think Zverev has improved too, compared to 2 years ago. I think those two would be my picks.
And
you go.
I said and you.
Yes, I think Tsitsipas is definitely the one right now. He's definitely in the driving seat.
He did struggle though in the Sunshine Double, didn't he, after the Australian Open? I feel like he lost a lot of confidence after that final against Djokovic.
He did. There's something that is going on with Thiem. After he won his Grand Slam, he just gave up on tennis. Gave up on tennis.
Well,
I saw it happening.
I think I texted him, was it last night, and said he's like someone who's won the lottery and has just
gone
part-time
AWOL.
At work.
Goodbye. Thank you very much. I don't need this anymore. It was strange. I saw him give up on matches. Literally, like, whatever.
It was the US Open the French Open straight afterwards, wasn't it? Where he had that massive fight to get through in five sets. It was against Tsitsipas.
Yes, he was.
And then he just
gave up.
Went two sets down and was like, oh, no, I'm done.
Well, he lost to Schwartzman, didn't he, at the French Open, who I think he's friends with, and there was a very friendly embrace at the net.
He did.
And you just think, that's a bit too unfriendly. The last few points, he seemed to give it away a bit. I hope he gets it back. I enjoy watching Thiem, and I thought he gave Nadal a run for his money in two finals.
I mean, even the last final, though, there were two close sets, and then I think the last two were like 3-2 or something. Yeah. Nadal ran away with it. So,
quick question for you, Steve. So, as a Nadal fan, just freshly celebrating his win, are you happy for his win, or are you tired of him taking over the whole damn clay?
Give it one more year and then he can go away. But just one more slam, I think, will be enough. Yeah, 21 will do it. And just to turn the head-to-head round against Djokovic, and then it's Team Tsitsipas all the way.
I like that. Speaking about this era of the three players, it seems to me, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong, that Federer is extending his life tennis and almost feels like they're all going to almost retire at the same time. I know that's not going to happen. Do you think they're going to suddenly stop playing well all at the same time? Or do you think Federer is going to retire and then all the other two are going to just still dominate tennis for a while? Or are the new ones finally going to step up and, you know, and take over because they're showing signs that they can do it?
Well, I read today there's a new book coming out about Federer, strangely called Federer Polaris, by a journalist, a Swiss journalist, who knows Federer and Mirka very well. This bloke, who's an expert on Federer, he thinks that Federer's going to carry on for another few years yet. He thinks he's going to carry on into his 40s. You would think that Djokovic and Nadal would carry on further, but their playing style takes more toll on bodies. I think they'll probably retire when they realise they can't win another Grand Slam, when they regularly get knocked out for 6 or 7 months.
And is that going to happen
soon? In the quarterfinals of tournaments. And that hasn't happened for a prolonged period for any of those players. They've all gone through bad times, but it hasn't been for long periods.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they'd have all retired before today, so they keep proving me wrong, so I don't really want to start saying anything else.
That's
now.
That's a good point. 2 days ago, we were so close to seeing a great final between Zverev versus Tsitsipas, and they would stamp their authority a little bit more. Nah.
I think one of them would have retired if they had clear blue water between themselves in terms of Grand Slam records and another. But they're driven on. Would you want to retire, say, if you were one slam ahead of another competitor, and then put your feet up in your mansion and watch on TV someone else overtake your record and you think,
I could be playing.
Yeah, I'm still fit. I'm still eating my porridge for breakfast. Why did I retire? I'm just mad.
True.
Well, you want to be that person?
That's exactly what happened to Sampras, isn't it? He thought, oh, he's up to 14. He's safe from anyone catching him.
Yeah.
and retired at 29, was it?
He could have lasted longer.
I don't think he had the love of tennis. Nadal and Federer and Djokovic often.
Yes.
And Murray, going back to the big four.
He's trying so hard.
look at Stephen's face. The sick bag, and Stephen's not happy with me. Am I in the exit? I don't think Sampras, one-dimensional though his reputation was, I don't think he had that deep ingrained love of tennis.
He didn't, I agree.
You never see him at events now. He's not coaching anyone.
No.
The only time he turned up was the time Federer won his 15th title to overtake him.
Yeah, it's a good point.
He likes his golf.
He does.
Maybe that's why he doesn't love tennis. Same with Tim Henman.
And now you made my day.
Yeah.
With Tim Henman.
Should we go on to another British player? That's all we want to talk about today, isn't it?
No, wait. It's Kyle Edmund. He is a good one as well.
Just had a knee operation.
So here's another statement that I want to pass by you guys, which is, I am feeling about this era with the three top guys that it's somehow, even though they're still winning a lot, we're looking past 5 years, for me, I was thinking about this the other day. I was watching the matches and I was like, this era is very special. It's not only because of the three, but because there's a lot of exciting young players. There's so much variety. There is something about these last 5 years, and of course, bringing from 15 years ago. Here's my question to you. Is it more exciting now, this era, than the era where Sampras and Agassi were, and maybe Boris as well in there? Was there more variety of great players? Because now I find myself very interested in so many matches.
Stephen, you're too young to remember previous eras, surely.
Yeah, I am a bit. But I'm just thinking about when Federer was first coming through. He obviously only played Sampras once. He played Agassi a few times, like they met in a final quite late on in Agassi's career. A lot of people who were Agassi fans were supporting Agassi then, and then gradually switched to Federer over the years. And yeah, so that's exactly what my point was going to be. Yeah, so you didn't have that exciting crossover way of waiting for the young guys to come and dethrone the older guys.
Mm-hmm.
So the older guys are still there, and you're still waiting for all these new players who all look like they've got the potential and all can give them a good match. And it's all about waiting to see when they actually break through. So yeah, it's a really exciting time, but I was feeling before only if the big players are still there.
What about you? You go way back. What do you feel about these three generations that we're talking about?
I used to travel to tennis matches on the Dinosaur. That's how far back I went.
Exactly.
Days when they played with stone rackets.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the big difference, David, when you first started watching tennis to how you watching tennis now is we've got far more buttons to press on our TV remotes. There's far more access to tennis
it's a very good point.
If you're going to afford the extra. And in a way, yeah, that makes it more exciting for you because you can watch and really feel connected and invested and watch whole tournament.
Very good point.
Whereas in my day, it was really a big occasion. If a tennis match was on TV, BBC Two would show highlights at weird o'clock of the Australian Open final. And it was really precious. You would watch that. There'd be no recording it and watching magic points later or saving it up. You had to watch it live.
True.
And in the way
that... sharing big shots for social media and WhatsApp each other.
No, exactly. You know, I didn't even have anyone to phone to say, wasn't Agassi's bandana majestic in that Australian Open final? And that made it more special in a way. It really...
It did, I agree.
It really did. So that was exciting. So from that point of view, I'd quite like to get into a time machine. How many tennis players actually play guitar? Because that used to be the thing. Pat Cash, John McEnroe, Mats Wilander. You don't hear of Federer and Nadal having a late night jam. It seems to have gone out of tennis.
It doesn't exist
what
anymore.
What are their interests? I know Nadal likes fishing.
And boating.
But yeah, they seem less well-rounded in a way.
There's more...
It's computer games, isn't it? That's what it is.
Medvedev is one of them. Yeah.
Kyrgios loves his Call of Duty, as he's always playing.
Basketball he loves too, but is that a proper hobby if you're a top sportsman anyway?
It's true. Look, you're actually touching on an interesting topic because with evolution of sports and tennis as we speak, it moved more and more into the professional side. The technology improved. There's more coaches. The family travels with the players. So there's definitely maybe more focus in tennis, more obsession into it, isn't it, these days than there was in the past.
But I was quite surprised when the pandemic first hit, a lot of footballers started playing FIFA against each other in tournaments. Yes. I was just surprised I had enough time to fit that in with all their training and everything.
Well, footballers traditionally, I think, train in the morning often and have the afternoon to themselves, which is how they got in bad ways with alcohol and gambling up until really the late 90s. So, yeah, they do have a lot of spare time. Whereas tennis, I think it's fair to say there's more travelling in tennis, I think, than in football. You do get the home matches 20, 25 times a season, whereas tennis, I think you're on the move a lot. So maybe they just don't have the time for that.
I remember what my topic was going to be that I forgot about.
Go. Shoot.
It was going to be, what can tennis learn from other sports?
Well, and what can other sports learn from tennis? Because I think VAR hasn't been a success.
Oh, it's been terrible.
In tennis, Hawkeye, I think, has been a success.
Yeah, it almost... It almost goes the other way around, your question. Tennis does not have anything to learn from
great
the
topic.
Others,
I mean,
but it does.
People say that Federer and Djokovic and Nadal, the magic of that era, has distracted away from the fact that tennis isn't attracting new fans and needs to modernise and kind of attract the kind of people who have a 30-second attention span. So, yes, how have other sports managed to do that and expand, and maybe tennis isn't expanding?
In what way, sorry?
Well, the article I read today was saying the magic of Federer and people like that, Djokovic, the big three, has disguised the fact there's a lot of corruption in tennis, and also it's not attracting new fans as much as other sports perhaps are. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you measure
corruption.
That.
I think there's also just a difficulty seeing a route to the top of tennis as well. Just what is the pathway? You see these elite players, you're like, not getting anywhere near that. Even the kids watching, you're like, there's only a few top players.
That's
whereas
true.
Look how many professionals there are in football, say. Even in this country, there's five leagues of teams which have 20 to 24 teams, and I guess
it's an individual sport instead of
a far more popular sport. If you go on the BBC Sport website, it's got a list of all the sports if you're looking for an article, and tennis is about eighth or ninth and might be quite lucky in that list.
But as a global sport, though, it's one of the biggest global sports compared to rugby, which is big in several countries, but it's not big around the world. To have so few professional tennis players, when even in England there's probably more professional rugby players than there are tennis players in the world.
So, Steve, tell us, what could other sports teach tennis?
So I just think there's a lack of team events that capture the public's imagination, really.
Mm.
So, I mean, I think I've said it to you before, like, why is there not like a county league that gets attention in England, where you're getting the best players in each county playing each other to basically reach the top? So you'd have like we had in our singles league, top four in Sussex play top four in Essex.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in the Premiership, you'd be like, oh, we'll watch that. We've got people we know who we want to support, our county. Whereas when you're first switching into tennis, you're like,
yeah,
why do I care about these players? Why do I care against a Spanish guy against a Swiss guy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, for me, part of the appeal of tennis when I was growing up was you weren't dependent on your teammates. It was you against the rest of the world. If you lost that match, that wasn't down to your teammate doing a bad shot, it was down to you. You were playing singles, and that was a great appeal. But now as I get older, I really enjoy the team element of tennis that you get sometimes, like the Park Singles Tennis League we had last year. It was great because if you lost your match, you could still cheer on your teammates, and that's great. Maybe that is a bit better for the people participating than for the people watching, perhaps the neutral who hasn't got any skin in the game. Yeah, maybe that's why tennis, you've got that kind of team versus individual contradiction. But the big advantage of rugby, the sport you love, and I love it too, I love rugby union, is they got this World Cup every 4 years, which is a team event. There's still no tennis equivalent at the moment, do you think?
You told me that once, didn't you?
Yeah,
I was going to say next, the
before,
World
yeah.
Cup of tennis.
With men and women playing together as well. But one of my favourite things to watch at the Olympics is actually the mixed doubles in the tennis. I just think you always get really interesting partnerships.
Yeah.
And you don't usually see the top players in doubles. So it's always nice to something
rarity,
like...
It's a rarity, and it's amazing when they...
That's
when
what Labour Cup came and brought very special.
How do we solve this problem of getting a world team competition.
That's something that actually excites me a lot. Labour Cup brought something that I connected with doubles like I never before.
But that's something they've learned from another sport, though, isn't it? That came from golf and the Ryder Cup, which I always watch the Ryder Cup in golf. I don't watch any other golf, but I just find that a brilliant format.
To answer your question, the problem is, and we all know it, it's too many singles tournaments every month. There's ATP 1000s, 500s, 250s, 100s. It never ends. Every month there's something going on for singles tennis and doubles as well.
It's a crowded calendar.
The world of tennis would have to almost like say, hey guys, the lower ones are going to be cancelled. Goodbye to your tournaments. And we're going to start putting some team tournaments. But that doesn't need to happen if they come up with the World Cup. But they found
room in the calendar for the ATP Cup, which was, I think, the brainchild partly of Gerard Piqué, the Barcelona defender, used to play for Manchester United. So they found room for that. And the top players did take part in that, actually. I think Djokovic, was it Serbia who won it?
Serbia won the inaugural one, and then
Nadal won the Davis Cup, which
just
was
before that was held
which was
in
condensed
Spain,
for the first time into a kind of one-off team event over a week.
So are we noticing a pattern here where whenever there is these teams tournaments, there is a higher emotion for it?
Yeah, because almost with the other tournaments, you know there's going to be another tournament in a couple of weeks where it's going to be the same draw, well, a similar draw, and you're going to get the same matches again, and you're sort of like, oh, I've lost this one, I'll try again for Rome.
Exactly, true, but how often do you see Federer teaming up with the top Swiss ladies player who might be ranked fifth
Bencic
in the world?
And
Bencic is top 20, you know.
No, but Bencic, after playing that tournament with Federer and winning, became one of the top. So even rises those players that she was a bit like unknown, and suddenly she wins that tournament with Federer. Not only we felt it with Kizoren's tournament teams here in Brighton, and I never felt the same emotion than when we all won our tournament. Yeah. In teams. Then that also translates to when the Labour Cup came, when the Hoffman Cup came. I loved seeing those players on the sidelines pumping up their team, and that there's the coach there.
Yeah,
there
fascinating to very, see the interaction.
Very special. And we had Stephen as the coach there always with us. So it was special.
Yes, yeah, he was the kind of Bjorn Borg, John McEnroe captain. So what's your answer, Stephen, to there's this... There is a gap.
Okay, so, yeah, I think the problem with the Davis Cup is it happens too often. You look at the other sports and they have their World Cup every 4 years and the excitement builds. Whereas the Davis Cup's every year, and once the players have won it once, they sort of stop and they don't come back and play it again. And then now you've got the ATP Cup as well that practically copied the same format once they condensed it down.
Yes. So I think there's room for the Davis Cup and one other world competition and the Olympics, but not the ATP Cup. And the Davis Cup and the Olympics. I think they have to make each other as different as possible. And it would be nice if there was a competition which brought the women and the men together.
That's
like the Hopman Cup, which is over now.
Yes, that's very important. I think we're missing definitely that. And this Labour Cup has to start bringing women. Federer explained it in an interview why it was difficult. To bring AWTA,
they
have to start new negotiations and etc. So I understand why there's a problem. But definitely they should be working hard to do it. But I agree with what you said. Every 4 years, the Davis Cup or the World Cup of tennis would rise that intensity. And then it would be very special.
So have a kind of four-year cycle where you have the Olympics, one in every 4 years, Davis Cup, one in every 4 years. And
World Cup. I would even give up on the Davis Cup.
No, it's got too much history.
I think it's nice to have tradition. So I think the Davis Cup should survive. That's great viewing.
So maybe, would you say, let's say, give it 100 years, will there be more team tournaments in tennis? Do you think it's going that direction in any way?
No, I think it's going the opposite way. I think there's increased obsession with the top players in the world and no one's really watching any other matches. As soon as the big players aren't there, you're like, oh, this is boring now.
Yeah.
And like here, everyone wants to go to Wimbledon. They don't even think about going to Nottingham and Eastbourne, really. You can always get tickets to them.
True, so cheap.
On my bucket list, it's going to Roehampton, which is the Wimbledon qualifying tournament. And I'd like to go there because you can see the players close up just as you can at Eastbourne. So that appeals to me more than going to Wimbledon, paying silly money and getting a mortgage out to be on centre court.
It's
and
true.
Just, you can't even see the player. They're just a little matchstick man in the distance, which has happened to me. So I'd rather see the world number 120... but see them close up, see the sweat on their brow.
Yeah, and compare that to how many people go to watch conference football in England every week. There's probably 3,000 at each match. And how many people go to Roehampton? Just doesn't get the same demands, and then Wimbledon sells out 100 times over. Well, because I was going to go on to something else on that topic as well.
Go for it.
Go on.
A lot of people will go to the pub to watch football matches and watch rugby matches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You never get people going to the pub to watch tennis, do you?
They don't.
Wouldn't that be great if we live in the world where tennis was so popular? It was like, oh, all right, Bill, you come into the pub to watch Zverev's third round match. Yeah, a bit nervous, yeah.
Yes.
And there's fights down the pub because Zverev has bounced the ball too many times. Although that would be awful in a way, it would be a sign that tennis has really succeeded.
Yes. You see, this goes back to human nature. We were talking about how teams attract. And it's funny because what these team sports do that tennis doesn't is relate to people as groups. There's a group playing and there's a group watching. Whereas in individual tennis, it's only one person. So,
but hey, why shouldn't we have this culture where, oh, yeah, the lads are coming round, it's a big match today. I mean, I went round to yours to watch the match today. So why isn't there this culture of doing it?
Yeah.
Corona.
Yeah, there
but
you go.
But this is all happening remotely, is it not?
why not?
I think it's definitely human nature. I think that the teams people watching, there's something
there.
It's a team thing, yeah. So Nadal complains time violation, justifying that there is no towel boys to give the towel, and therefore he complains. Is he right or wrong?
So he got a time violation because he was faffing around with his towel.
He got the time violation for going over the 20 seconds. Now, whatever shenanigans he goes through, but he complained to the umpire that it's because there's no towel boys. Are you on his side or not?
No. I mean, there's so much wrong with this. First, I think the towel boys are ridiculous. You're just throwing a sweaty towel at this poor child.
It's terrible.
And then on top of that, he's got so much time to faff around with his feet and his arse, and yeah, he can't find time to go get a towel during all that.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, is in the Dow fans.
Yeah, props to he can see the other side. It's true. There's no justification. Yeah. You agree? Yeah.
I can also see his point that if you're still being given the same amount of time and you no longer have the towel boy to come and bring you the towel, if you've got this whole routine worked out to use in that time.
And he's a routine kind of guy.
Very short answer to a great question. Ban towels. I think they create distractions, waste time. I've never used a towel in a match, and I know I'm a hell of a lot lower level, but I think you've got this prop here which causes you to waste time.
Well, I sweat a lot in general if I play sport, and I've never needed a towel, so I don't really see how these pros would.
We've got these things in modern culture called wet bands. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yep.
Why not use those?
Yes. So, yes.
Great question, though.
Okay, second one. So there was some matches, and it's been happening for many months, where some players like Shapovalov and others, they throw the ball up, ball toss to serve, and they do it wrong, and then do it again, and they do it wrong, and they do it again. This is what happens in women's tennis as well. One of the commentators suggested that, and I don't agree, by the way, but it would be two bad ball tosses per set.
Oh, wow, that's brutal. As long as you don't do two in a row, I think it's fine.
Exactly. So what about you, Jim?
Yeah, I think another great question. It's really important. I drew a match last season, I think, with someone who did this themselves. And it is frustrating because it does...
You're getting ready.
Well, I didn't actually. That's really bad. But I know I should do the split step. But it disrupted my rhythm.
Yeah.
The number of times these players throw the ball up in the air, they can't really do it wrong that often unless they lose concentration.
Or lots of wind.
Yeah, but that can happen in the middle of a point as well. So why should there be a difference from throwing the ball up? Should the point just start from when you throw the ball?
Yes. I like that, Steve. Give you once, but twice you have to hit it, whatever happens. Here's another one. 3-4 times in this tournament, I was very happily watching the mainstream Nadal down a set against Shapovalov. And suddenly the main coverage switches to Murray doubles.
Andy Murray, for listeners.
Yes,
here.
Guys, tell me, what is going on? This happened with Edmund as well. They'd stopped Medvedev, which is the number two in the world. What do you guys have to say?
Nine-time champion, Nadal. Over to Jim.
Of what? What tournament has he been nine-time champion?
Rome.
Oh, 10 now.
That's true. Jim, defend your Murray.
I think, yes, you rest your case, my lads. So it is bad. There's going to be this national bias, which is featuring a British player making his comeback, who is a national legend in the eyes, especially of the sports broadcasters, who are probably friends with him and friends with Murray's friends. So, yeah, forgive us this, because it is unforgivable, really. Yeah, it is bad, but it's kind of understandable.
Because of the natural thing, yeah. Exactly. Okay, now let's finish with the rule change.
Talking about rule change. Talking about rule.
Okay, so my rule change is connected with Stephen's topic of... you wanted to talk about the Olympics, actually, didn't we? We talked about that a bit.
Yes, I remember.
But my rule change is, and it does mess with tradition, I think the Olympics men's singles should only be open to people who've never won a singles Grand Slam before.
Ah, rubbish. Sorry.
There you go. There's your answer. So
say that again.
No, the Olympics should be the pinnacle. I always think football, the Olympics is crap because it's all under 23s with three extra players.
I agree with that. I think it's a fudge because some teams take it seriously and do field their best players and other teams it's under 23. But hear me out, please. I'm going to convert you, Stephen, and change your mind. I think if you adopted my idea, players have come close but have never quite won that Grand Slam. And it would just go back to that old Olympic ideal of...
So it sounds like you're describing a Masters 250 to me.
So I haven't converted you?
No. Yeah, and I agree.
All right, so David, have I...
No, because it's unfair. If I'm a Grand Slam champion, I mean, I still want to compete in the Olympics. So
denied?
Denied.
Denied. Good night, everyone. Thank you for listening to Unforced Errors. Until
see you
next
later.
Time.
Mine is, I think they should stop seating the players every two games. I think maybe four or even six.
And that's a great suggestion. It's a great topic.
It just doesn't make sense to continue seating players every two games because...
So how many games do you think they should have a sit down?
They could even play the whole set without sitting down. They have energy for it. I mean, football players...
So why do they have it?
If you play football...
The advert breaks.
Yes, it's true. Would you like that?
Yeah, I'd say you can go to four to six games easily.
Yeah.
And if you lose a game through tiredness because you haven't had a sit down...
Then it's your thing, exactly.
Stephen.
Yes, me. Okay. So, yeah, I was thinking from watching the match today, obviously, I feel like Nadal had an advantage or break points. His serve kicks to Djokovic's backhand, whereas Djokovic is always on the juice point. I was thinking if it should be an option which side you start serving on each game, because that's what you do in squash. You can choose whether to start serving on the right or the left to serve to their backhand first.
What can you learn from other sports?
There you go. Right-handed players, when they play against the left, you'd be allowed to serve from the left first to go to the backhand first. And
that's very...
I've never thought about that.
There is a statistic, I think. I can't remember the exact thing, but if you win the first point of the game, you are largely more... likely to win the game, not just slightly more likely, but you've got a big advantage to probably win the game.
And you won the first point, you feel a bit more relaxed, you're open. Yeah.
And it's decision making, isn't it?
I'm very impressed. I really like that suggestion.
Okay, David, so what side would you kick off on mostly, do you think, if you had the choice when if you're serving?
Depends who you're playing, surely.
That's a good point as well. Like, if it's a left-hander, maybe that. If you're
I like serving from the ad side.
Yes, but not only. I mean, this is every game you serve, you can change, isn't it? Which means in very important games of the match, that decision might be essential.
I think that'd be great to juice as well.
And I like the juice idea as well.
I would support Stephen's idea. We should try that idea in a trial game, I think.
Next match?
Yeah.
Deal?
Yeah.
I'm going to lose track of where I'm serving from, but hey.
Yeah, that's the only thing I was thinking about as
that's
well.
The problem. That's like the counter to it.
Yes, that
it's
is very
like, oh,
that
where are we supposed
true.
To be now? He has to be the umpire guiding people.
Yeah, that needs a bit of work, but I think that's a great suggestion.
Great suggestion. That was a really good episode. And finally, the predictions for the French Open. Jim?
Starting off with Jim, okay, I say this every time and Steve always has a bet with me. I've never paid up. He's forgotten that. But this time, this time Nadal really isn't going to win it. I know he's expected. He should be the favourite. But I'm going to go for Tsitsipas is going to do it this time.
Djokovic.
Okay, I'm going to go Nadal to beat Tsitsipas in the final.
That's a good final. So,
not only are you predicting the final, you're predicting the draw as well.
And in the women's?
Świątek. I'm a believer.
It's got to be Joe Konter, hasn't it?
Yes, definitely.
I'd back you as Świątek, yeah.
Świątek. Let's go! Osaka is in the final against. So, Jim, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Steve-O, thanks for coming. It's been a long time. Well, good to see you here.
It's an absolute pleasure. Yeah. It's nice to be back in town.
Yeah, exactly. Back in town.
Yeah, we'll be back after the French Open, I suppose.
We'll be back after the French Open.
Which Tsitsipas is going to win, obviously.
Yes, he is.